You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
From baseball's top personalities.
The great Chris Russo joins us once again.
To the game's top players.
Joining us is the All-Star, Matt Chapman with us.
You never know what stories you're going to hear.
If you make your way down here, I might be able to make some time and go out there and see the great Chris Townsend.
This is A's Unfiltered with Chris Townsend.
Ray Fosse, where you were in Cleveland in 1972?
Yes, I was, Townie. How you doing, buddy?
I was born in 1972. I was born at the start of the A's dynasty.
Townie, Carol and I played. Cleveland had a game. I've said this before, but the Indians, we played in the afternoon, and Carol and I went back to our condo. And we had gotten married in 70, so 72, we had a condo in South Cleveland. Nobody lived in downtown Cleveland, so we were south of Cleveland. It's a little bit different now, but we were living in a condo, and I turned on the TV, and I just yelled, like, Carol, look, these guys are wearing mustaches and long hair, and nobody at the time did that. So that was my introduction to the future world champion, Oakland Athletics, because the great late Charlie Finley had the promotion about guys grow mustaches, grow whatever, we'll give you money, which, as Raleigh Fingers would say, $200 at the time with a gold plated mustache comb was a lot of money to the Oakland A's. So they took it, and I was in Cleveland, and you know, as much as I didn't want to be traded, it turned out to be the greatest thing, because you know what, all these years later, as I've said, I get to sit here and talk to you guys, and it's been a blessing. And I thank my wife, Carol, because she kept saying, you know, there are two teams in the Bay Area, and so we kind of settled here, and the rest is history. Fortunately, I've been part of the Oakland A's organization for many, many years, and I'm very blessed, and very blessed to be on the air with you guys, and happy to be here today, especially after a big win yesterday.
You know, and I know we joke about it all the time, but I really mean it. When I call you the face of the franchise, you know, you're the one person that bridges the gap of the greatness of the A's in the 70s to where we are today. You're the guy. And
well, I appreciate
and I got to tell you, Ray, and stop being humble, because guys that I know that are my age and a little bit older who I hang out with, like, their whole life they've known you. You're the one constant of A's baseball in their entire life, and I've brought a couple of them down on the field, and I've had you go over and meet them, and you know how they react when they meet you.
Yeah, well, I will say it's kind of interesting, and you know, I don't think about it. I just enjoy what I do. I love baseball, always have. But I was someplace the other day, and of course, with the mask, you never know what a person's doing behind the mask, you know. And I think Matt Pearl, after the A's clinched the Western Division, he had a picture of himself, and he said, "I'm smiling under this mask." Well, you don't know. And so I asked a gentleman about something. He goes, "Hey, Ray, how you doing?" I went, "Huh?" And I was kind of shocked. He said, "I recognize the voice." So again, it's something I don't think about, but. You know, Townie, again, to have been in the Bay Area, and again, I give my wife, Carol, a lot of credit because, you know, she's from the Valley, and we settled in the area, and I've been here a long time, obviously, but I appreciate the compliments. But, you know, that 72 team, and, you know, Joe Rudy is such a treat, and I think Cody's going to call him because I think you have the general manager, David Forrest, on at 10.
Correct. So we're going to call Joe right now.
Yeah, call Joe because, you know, he's such a great, great person. And, you know, he and his wife Sharon down in Florida now, they were up in Baker, Oregon, and to the Las Vegas area, and then on to Florida where he's settled right now. So
this is Joe.
There is Joe.
Joe, how you doing? It's Chris Townsend with the Oakland A's and your old teammate, Ray Fosse.
Oh, my God. Is he still alive?
Hey, listen, you're already up, my friend, and you've had several cups of coffee because you're back on the East Coast. And how's Sharon doing?
She's doing great. She's getting better every day. Or, you know, done with her physical therapy. She's just got to continue to work on getting her full range of motion back in her left arm. So she's doing good. No more pain, thank goodness.
Well, that's good. I know you're in the great Florida area where the sun always shines and it's always nice. I was in, you know how that works. And I played instructionally one often, and it was one of those things you walk outside and you don't have to do anything. And compared to when we were in Arizona in spring training, the comparison of Florida, you walk out, throw one ball and you're loose. And in Arizona, you got to throw about 20 to get loose. So it's a little bit of different climate,
exactly.
But you know, I'm happy for you, my friend. And it's an exciting time. And I know Chris and Cody Elias, Cody, of course, contacted you, and I'm very happy to have you on to talk about, hey, listen, that great catch you made, and everybody's talking about 48 years ago, where were they? And Cody, what'd you say, Cody, you're a minus 16?
Yeah, I was born in 1988, so I wasn't even a thought in my parents' mind yet.
Oh my God.
But Joe, that great catch in the World Series, and again, Vince Catronio yesterday, on the call, you know, he referenced you so quickly, making the call that the catch that you made in 1972. Take us back to that, and basically, I know you give a lot of credit to one coach who really helped you play an outstanding outfield, but take us back to 1972. I think it was game two in Cincinnati.
Right. Yep.
Dennis Mincke, you made the fabulous catch. Take us back, and I know you remember it like it happened yesterday, but take us back to that time, because we saw it again almost exactly with Mark Canna yesterday.
Yeah, people don't realize the thousands of times that you practice that very catch type of thing. Like as you were referencing, Coach, you know, with the A's, myself especially, we're very blessed when we moved from Kansas City to Oakland that we had Joe DiMaggio, who was, you know, fairly decent outfielder, I think, if I remember right. Anyway, you know, he was our outfield coach. And I, you know, I'm a shortstop and bounced around third base a little bit. And they finally, Bob Kennedy was trying to make me into a left fielder. And, you know, he took me under his wing that year in 68. And starting in spring training, Joe DiMaggio was out there every day before games from spring training all the way through the seasons, all of 68, 69, trying to teach me footwork, you know, how to, you know, focus on, you know, the ball getting up to the hitter, eye shift from the pitcher to the hitter, and where to look in front of the hitter to see the bat come through. And, you know, just learning the footwork was hard enough. And then turning your back on a ball and going back and being on the right line and understanding that every ball, you know, right field, left fielder, if the ball's hit right at you or towards the line, it's always going to be curving. Whether it's right-handed or left-handed hitter, it's always moving towards the line. And you always have to adjust for that as you turn, because your first instinct, like that ball, was to rotate to my left. And then I had to make that adjustment back towards the line as the ball started moving that way. But again, it was one of those wonderful things with the Joe D that, you know, we practiced and practiced and practiced. And I had a heck of a time learning line and go to the right spot. And, you know, as Yogi Berra used to say, it's a, you know, deja vu all over again, because we practiced that thousands and thousands of times going back and on that ball and watching him yesterday. Again, he's got to bust his butt, get back to the fence. And actually that ball as an outfielder going to your left or your glove side, I should say, because it happened if you're right-handed or left-handed thrower in right field like Reggie was. That ball to your left, as you're running hard and trying to judge, because the glove is over to your left, you really can't, you're focusing on the ball and you open your gloves in the right spot. It, to me, is actually a tougher catch. I mean, it was a super catch in a very, must-win situation.
That's amazing that you worked on it that much. And Chris, jump in here anytime. I know I've got several things to talk to Joe about, but
Chris, kidding me? You guys just go.
Chris, I have to ask you though, Chris Townsend, how would you like to have the great Joe DiMaggio teaching you to play the outfield?
I got to tell you, every single time I go into Vuce's office and I see the picture of Joe DiMaggio, and you know, because for me growing up, Joe D was a Yankee. You know, he's one of the biggest celebrities in America at the time, and Marilyn Monroe, and reading about him and seeing all that. Joe, just to think that You got Joe DiMaggio as your coach. I mean, it's just it's incredible to think of the greatness that you had around you that you were able to learn from.
It really is. He was so in awe going to spring training, you know, and Joe D, and like you said, the aura around him and everything else. But he was a great guy. He was just another player. I mean, once he got around the players, he was just one of the guys. He was a jokester and liked to screw around, and he was great. You know, he got very, I guess you call him distant when he got around writers or people he didn't know. He was very cautious and guarded in that area. But with the players, he was just one of the guys. He'd go out there and yell at you and call you stupid and, you know, where are you going? And, you know, I mean, it was just so much fun to work with him all the time. And, you know, people don't realize back then, you know, ballplayers didn't make a lot of money. We had, I remember 67, we had Gabby Hartnett, who was a Hall of Fame catcher, as one of our coaches. Luke Appling, wow. Hall of Fame catcher shortstop from the White Sox, yes. Was one of our coaches. Haywood Sullivan. You know, there was a lot of great coaches back then that stayed in the game. And as you said, learning from Joe D, I mean, who else to teach all that stuff? Just a great guy.
Joe, one of the things in watching the replay from your catch, when you caught the ball, you put it in your right hand and you raised it. Was there a concern that maybe you didn't think that they thought you caught the ball? Well, I mean, I don't even know if it's a reaction, but why did you take the ball out and put it in your right hand and put it up and then throw it back in and almost doubled off? I think it was Tony Perez at first base, but you know, what was behind that?
Well, I think as I went back to catch the ball, is one of the things Joe D taught me was, you know, when you're going up against the hard wall, you know, we didn't have padding back in those days. Yeah. And as you go up to catch a ball, especially backhanded like that, or either way, especially backhanded, you know, as you catch the ball and you bang into the wall, it's really easy for the wall to knock the ball out of your glove. So as you catch the ball, you rotate your hand. And so you hit the wall with the front of your glove, not the web backing of it. And so as I caught the ball down, coming down, I'm afraid that they're thinking that I caught the ball on a rebound off the wall. And so that's one of the reasons I held the second to show them I had the ball and threw it in, you know, made a good throw to Campy and a good throw to first and just missed doubling him off first. But that was my first thought. And of course, Sparky Anderson came out and argued because of the bang, the crash. You could hear me banging into the wall. He came out and argued that I had trapped the ball off the wall. But thank goodness, you know, in the World Series, you have six umpires, and we had the umpire down the left field line. So he saw how I, because he even put his hand up and showed him we rotated his left hand like I did after I caught the ball. And, you know, that was my first thing. My first influence went through my brain was, I hope they don't think I trapped the ball.
That's a great point. How was it playing the outfield with no padding compared to today when you see everything's padded. It's almost, I don't know if a player would play in the outfield without the padding, but how difficult was it for you as an outfielder to know that you needed to make a play like that? And you obviously knew the warning track, you had what, three steps into the wall and you knew you were going to bang into it. How much of a concern was it for you as an outfielder knowing that there is no padding and you are going to hit the wall hard and it could affect you?
Well, I think it's no different than you as a catcher going back to the screen. Some of those things didn't have a lot of padding for you back there either. You know, you can't really think about it. I mean, you're totally focused on the ball and you know you're going to hit the wall and you just sort of prepare yourself to control the impact where it's not going to knock your glove out of sorts. I think the worst bang or crashing in the wall I ever had was in 73 against the Mets. And I'm trying to remember who the hitter that hit that ball. You know, they had plexiglass in front of the they had the walls, but in front of the bullpens straight away left behind me was all plexiglass. So there was no way you could see it out of the corner of your eye. And I think it was Cleon Jones hit a rocket back there. I went back and caught the ball and didn't know I was right there at the wall because I had run quite a ways. I hit that wall, and it, I don't know if you remember, it spun me around in a circle and knocked me down because I didn't know the wall was there. And so that was the other thing. You know, your peripheral vision sort of helps you out to prepare that you're going to hit the wall. And we just, it was, you know, accepted. We never thought about, well, it doesn't have padding or it does, but I'm sure glad they do.
Well, you know, just a quick point of reference. I know when Yoenis Cespedes came from Cuba and played here, and he kind of shied away. And finally, Ariel Prieto was his interpreter, and he told everybody they had concrete walls in Cuba. There was no such thing as padding. So there was a reason that he would shy away. But the one thing, Joe, today for the Athletics and the White Sox, it's winner take all. And Cody Elias, of course, brought up the fact that 73 was the last time. Correct me if I'm wrong. Is that what you said, Cody, the last time there was a winner take all for the Athletics in Game 7 of the World Series in 73?
That's correct. Game 7 of the 73 World Series was the last winner-take-all win for the Oakland A's.
Okay, I want to go back with Joe, because, Joe, you were there with the A's in 72. You had a winner-take-all against the Tigers Game 5. At the time, the league championship series, unlike now, is 7. It was 5 during that period of time. You had that against the Tigers, and unfortunately, your good friend Reggie Jackson injured his hamstring, couldn't play in the World Series. But then also Game 7 against the Reds is a winner-take-all as well, and you guys won. How much did that help? Because I came over in 73, and thankfully I did, because I got a chance to get 2 rings with you guys. But how much did what happened in 72 with the League Championship Series and the World Series help you going forward in 73 to experience the same thing?
Well, I think, you know, we played that way all year. You know, it was a big difference of today's how the game's played. You know, we had Dick Williams, who was an extreme stickler for small ball. You know, he did, you just didn't make mental errors with him. And, you know, when you got thrown the wrong base, man on second base with nobody out, you got to get that guy to third. You know, there was no excuse for not getting him over there or hitting the fly ball to score the runner from third, but with less than 2 outs and that type of thing. So we played an awful lot of games, you know, 3-2, 2-1, that were really tight games. Unfortunately, we had a very good defensive team, and just, you know, getting used to playing that type of ball day in and day out, I think we were prepared to get into those type of games as we moved in. You know, 71, we were still a little bit young, got swept by the Baltimore in the playoffs. And, I think he did a better job preparing us in 72, getting ready for that season. And you know, it was a tough series with the Tigers. And, of course, first great team. We just happened to have better pitching and got a little more timely hitting here and there and got some breaks, as every team needs to win. And so all you can do is go out and do your best. And, you know, it's going to happen. And so you got to be prepared for it.
Joe, one of the things that Dick Williams did in Game 7, he put Dave Duncan behind the plate because he figured the Reds were going to be running. And Gino has always told me the best day in his life was when I got traded to Oakland in 73 because he didn't have to catch, because he wanted to play first base and didn't want to have the bumps and bruises behind the plate. But what did you see in Game 7 that basically you felt that you had a chance to win because of playing those close games? But some of the changes that were made by Dick Williams, I know he did it with me in 73, Game 6 and 7. He had put Darren Johnson in at first base, and Gino caught to start out. I ended up finishing the games. But the changes that had to be made and were made by Dick Williams during those couple of years, what did that say to you guys about how much he wanted to win?
No, as I said, he was a stickler, and you know, all those – both those seasons that we were, well, actually I got to play for him 3 years, 71 he was there.
Right.
You know, when he came over and joined the team in 71, you know, he just changed the whole mental attitude of that ball club. And everybody started playing basic fundamental baseball. And, you know, coming into those series, like you said, I mean, you know, he studied things. He knew what was going on, you know, put Mike Hegan at first base. Remember the great play he made over there. And yeah. Of course, Duncan had a great arm, and it was just one of those things. You know, times Dave struggled at the bat, as we all do, go in and out of times when we're struggling at hitting. And so I thought he did a masterful job of moving people around. You know, bringing Catfish in to close the game. You know, using Raleigh at different times, and just the way he strategized. Using everybody. I mean, the whole 25-man roster, he used everybody.
You know, the one thing, Joe, that, as I mentioned before, your good friend Reggie Jackson injured his hamstring in Detroit Game 5 of the League Championship Series and could not play. I can still visualize him on crutches in the World Series when you guys went to Cincinnati. The A's lost Matt Chapman, Platinum Glove winner, you know, two consecutive years. How did you guys go into the World Series knowing that you did not have your big bat in the lineup, but knowing that you still had a good team to win, but missing that link, as the A's obviously are missing Matt Chapman? How did you guys handle the World Series knowing that Reggie was not going to be there?
Well, it was a big shock. You know, fortunately, Reggie, through his play, you know, actually scored the winning run to help us, you know, clinch the winning the playoffs against the Tigers. That's how he got hurt, was scoring that winning run. And, you know, it was a tough play. Bill Freehan was a big guy who was their catcher, and he was blocking the plate. And Reggie did a great job to get just to even score. But, you know, going forward, I think especially in 72, we were so happy as a team to be in the World Series. We didn't really have time to even think about we're going about against the big red machine. And fortunately, you know, they probably had a much better overall hitting team than we did, but we had the pitching and the defense.
Yeah.
We had a great defensive team and we had great pitching, great relief pitching. And I think when we won the first game, hey, you know, we can win a game here. And then we win the second game and go, whoa. You know, maybe these guys, you know, maybe our pitching is that good, and which it did turn out to be. And we had tough games even out in Oakland. Those games were tough out there. They took two out of three from us. And then coming back, we had to fly all night, got in there like, I think about dawn in 72 because we had the rain out.
Yeah.
And so we didn't have a day off. So we had to fly after the game Friday all night, get into Cincinnati, catch a couple hours sleep and go to the ballpark. And I think everybody was sort of groggy. I'm trying to remember, but it seems like almost all the games were like 3-2 except that Saturday game. Trying to think, maybe there's one to nothing game in there in Oakland, but we had a lot of really, you know, one run games through that whole series. And as you know, people say good pitching usually stops good hitting.
Yeah.
And that's what happened for us. And I know today is going to be a tough game in Oakland. And it's, you know, it's a battle. You know, it used to say you go home after every game, you got a severe headache just from concentrating so much. Because every pitch, whether you're on defense or offense, you can't afford to take a pitch off. You know, you got to be locked in on every, especially on defense. You just can't afford to give up and you know, extra run here or there. And pretty much that's what Dick Williams taught us to do, you know, all year long. So by the time we got into those playoffs, we were prepared mentally to play.
Joe, before I let you go, and appreciate your time, because I wanted to ask you, because of the COVID-19 this year, the one thing that is missing, and obviously times have changed because of the analytics and a lot of things that go on, but in 1972, you guys were playing the Reds, and you had not seen them. How important, and explain the scouting report that you guys got. I saw what happened in 73 against the Dodgers when I was part of that. But how important was the scout? And I'd try, you know his name. I can't remember his name. But talk about the importance of the scout telling you all the details about the Cincinnati Reds that helped you guys beat them in the first of three consecutive World Series.
Oh, it was phenomenal. I mean, like you said, we hadn't really faced them that much. And, you know, I'm sure they still have the same thing today. We used to have what we call forward scouts that would be going to the team that you're going to play next and watching the pitchers, watching the hitters, you know, how's this guy handling whatever pitches as a hitter, and where to play him, where is he trying to hit the ball, what pitchers are going to throw what pitches in that situation. And I know when we got Cincinnati, and you know, Dick Williams and the coaches obviously met, and I'm sorry, I cannot remember. I almost want to say Clyde Klutz, but I don't think that was him. The guy
Deloitte,
that
was it Lloyd Krister? Lloyd Krister?
I don't remember the name now, but he did a phenomenal job. I mean, he gave a book literally to Dick Williams. If you watch the replays of the World Series, Dick was constantly pulling stuff out of his pocket. And he had like a book of information on every player, where we should play the play, you know, defensively, where should we be playing on a defensive load? And then, you know, went out. Look at the number of times he went to the mound. And yeah, I think they finally came out with a rule about you could only go so many times without taking the pitcher out. Was that because of Dick Williams in 72? But, it was critical. I really don't think we'd have won that World Series without that scouting report because it was so detailed for everybody. I mean, he had stuff for us in the outfield, the infield, the pitchers, and what pitches the guys were hitting. I mean, it was one of the best scouting reports I've ever seen.
And you did it all from memory. You didn't have something in your back pocket that you referenced?
Not really. You know, we not anymore. You know, back then we had to really memorize guys. And, one of the blessings that we had was, especially after Billy North came over, was, as you remember, you know, the guys like, you know, Tony Oliva, Rod Carew, George Brett. I mean, the guys that are really good hitters, you know they're going to hit the ball. And we used to stack the defense. It's a little bit like they do now in the infield. But, you know, back then, we just, you know, say Carew or Brett, you know they're going to hit the ball where it's pitched. So let's throw them hard fastballs away. I'd play really shallow. Billy and Reggie would swing way over towards left field. And Reggie's in right center. Billy's in left center. Ball's over my head. Billy's got it. But I took away a lot of hits that were line drives right over Campy's head, over Sal's head. I didn't have to worry about behind me, but you know, you had to depend on the pitcher not to throw an off speed pitch and the guy could pull it down the right field line. But if you remember those days, that's pretty much the way Dick taught us to play.
Well, I'll close this in saying, I know when I was fortunate to be traded over here, the first thing Dick Williams said to me, and you've talked about it throughout this time, he said, "We pitch and we catch the ball. We don't give extra outs." And I'm sure that's what, you know, he brought it over from the Dodgers as he grew up in the Dodger organization. That's the way he was taught and he brought it over. And I'm sure, just as you talked about, that's what his influence on you guys was, especially from 71, 72, when you had the first experience with him. I got to experience it in 73. But Joe, cannot thank you enough for your time. I know Chris Townsend has constantly talked about one thing: making contact as a hitter. And I know that I think you could right now put a bat in your hand, and I've always said this, and go out and hit line drives, because you were that great of a hitter, and you still could be if you put a bat in your hand right now. So continue enjoying the life in Florida. Our best to Sharon, and God bless you, my friend. You're a good man, and I always look forward to seeing you, hopefully sooner than later.
I hope so. Get this virus over with. Again, our love to Carolyn. You guys stay healthy out there. And we're all very blessed, weren't we? Just be in the right place at the right time. And a lot of things came together for us, didn't it?
Well, it sure did. And there are only two teams in the history of baseball that have won three consecutive world championships: the New York Yankees, of course, and the Oakland Athletics. And I think, and Cody Elias is a great statistician, he knows, but I think the last time there were three 20-game winners on the same team was in 1973 with Gatfish, Kenny Holtzman, and Vida Blue. So that's quite remarkable. You guys were tremendous. You've got three world championship rings. You deserved every one of them. And to me, the most underrated player, but the greatest player that ever played left field for the Athletics. So, again, appreciate your time, my friend.
Well, I appreciate that. we had a great time. So good luck to the guys today, and just hope we get the right bounces and the right breaks, correct?
You got that right, Joe. Thank you, my friend.
Okay, you guys have a good one. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Joe.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
This has been a presentation of the Oakland Athletics.